Thanks, Simon. So welcome back to this final session. Just to remind everyone, if you could please be on mute when you're not speaking. I'll hear a little bit of background news. So this is the ISB's technical update that I have the pleasure of delivering on this occasion. And if we just look forward to the agenda here, on the next slide, please. We'll talk about the, after the introduction, the current work of the board and its re-deliberations. We'll then look at some of its current and forthcoming consultations before touching on other projects and the work of the Interpretations Committee. And I will pause between each of those sections just to take any questions or comments. But if we just start with the introduction slide, please. So just some highlights in terms of recent developments. We published in April an exposure draft on lack of exchangeability, and this is proposing amendments to IS21, and it deals with those situations where there isn't an immediately obvious spot rate and the steps that an entity should follow under those circumstances. And we also published last month some final amendments to IS12 around deferred tax and how that relates to assets and liabilities arising from a single transaction. And the particular example here was where the tax base was applied to a lease asset or a lease liability, for example, that could have different timing consequences in terms of how tax is recognized and the impact on deferred tax to try and actually, in fact, it does result in a consistent treatment. The trustees continue their work on the possible establishment of a sustainability standards board, and they published at the end of April a proposed amendments to the constitution of the foundation, which is currently out for comment, and there's an opportunity to hear later about more about the trustees' work in this area. And as you know, we've just been talking about it, the board published the exposure draft on management commentary a couple of weeks ago. We do have two new board members joining us on the 1st of July. Andreas Barkov, who will join us as chair of the board, formerly chair of the German Accounting Standards Setter, and Bertrand Perrin, who joins us as a preparer from Vivendi in France. And sadly, we will be saying goodbye to three of our existing members, our chair, Hans Hugovas, who's been with the board for 10 years, Martin Elderman, who chaired yesterday's meeting, and Francois Flons, who's been with us both yesterday and today. And we will miss all three of those. So just in terms of providing you an overview of the board's main consultations, we go forward to that slide, please. This has been a busy time for the board, which also means it's then be a busy time for our stakeholders as well. The board has sought to respond to stakeholder concerns about the pace of activity here, and we have extended comment periods or started with longer comment periods than would be normal for many of these consultations, just to try and spread the load. I won't go through any of these projects in detail now because we'll pick up on all of them in some of the subsequent slides. So let's turn our attention to the matters that the board is currently re-deliberating. So we have a number of projects that we're working on here. So this is where we have received feedback already from stakeholders. And if we begin with what's clearly a very high profile project for us, primary financial statements. And so the comment period here ended in September last year. And just to give you an overview, and this is at a very high level in terms of what we heard from stakeholders, it's that mostly stakeholders agreed with our proposals to bring more structure to statement of profit or loss in terms of introducing subtotals and categories to that statement, and particularly the proposed operating profit subtotal. There was also our proposals around management performance measures, so key non-GAAP measures of performance to bring more transparency and discipline to those measures. I would say, excuse me, were also welcomed by many stakeholder groups. So not just users, but also preparers, regulators, auditors, and others. And in fact, the one question that the board, the key question that the board is deliberating now, re-deliberating, is should we actually be extending the scope of those measures? So beyond just the profit and loss statement, should they also incorporate measures derived from the cash flow statement, from the balance sheet, and indeed ratios that may combine metrics from across those statements? So that is a key area of debate. There's also positive support for what was set out in the exposure draft on the role of primary financial statements and the notes, together with the disaggregation principles and the amendments, proposed amendments to IAS 7, the cash flow statement. There are a couple of issues where I would say there was agreement in principle, often or generally, but some practical issues were flagged. Excuse me. So they were around specifically unusual items of income and expenses, and secondly around minimum line items. So the board will have to go back and consider carefully how to overcome some of the practical issues that were raised there. And the final category where, which were more controversial and there was more disagreement, were the proposals around the analysis of expenses by nature and by function, and also the proposal to present separately integral and non-integral associates and joint ventures. So likewise, the board will go back and review and re-deliberate its proposals in those areas. The next slide sets out the work which we are doing in terms of our second review for IFRS for SMEs. I won't spend long on this because I don't think it's probably a key area of interest for the group that we have with us today. But the board is committed to, excuse me, undertaking periodic reviews of the standards here. The key message we have back from stakeholders is that they welcome these standards, they like them to be stable, and they require them to remain relatively or to be straightforward to use. And so whilst it's important that in the periodic reviews we can look at and consider the changes that have happened to the full body of IFRS work and whether it's appropriate to implement those in the IFRS for SME standards, that it is that straightforward nature of the standards that is their raison d'etre. So the board will consider those issues carefully. The next project is and I have a message from Shanif in the chat. We'll come back to the FICE project shortly, rest assured. In terms of the goodwill and impairment project, so here our discussion paper on business combinations, disclosures, goodwill and impairment ended in December 2020. The comment period ended there. And so the board has been reviewing the feedback it heard on those three sets of proposals which are outlined on this slide. So just to remind you what those are, it's about disclosing or improving the disclosures about management's objectives for acquisitions and the subsequent performance of those acquisitions. There are also some existing targeted improvements to the existing standards in terms of the economics of the acquisitions on day one. There's then the debate around whether we should retain a impairment-only model for goodwill, which was the board's proposal in the discussion paper, and what steps the board could also take to simplify the impairment model. And then the third area covered some other areas, and this was whether we should present a total of equity excluding goodwill and whether we should consider making changes to the recognition of intangibles that are separately recognized from goodwill. And so let me deal with that third area first of all. So I'd say there was limited exposure to address either of those areas to have an amount for total equity excluding goodwill, or to, certainly in this project, address issues around the recognition of intangibles. The board continues to consider the feedback in terms of the subsequent treatment of goodwill. Here, as ever, we have very mixed feedback from stakeholders. there's some very strong groups who have, and individuals who have conceptual views that either goodwill is a wasting or isn't a wasting asset. And between those ends of the spectrum, you have various degrees of pragmatism along the way. I think perhaps the one surprise, the feedback we saw, is that the response from investors was more mixed than it had been hitherto. A couple of other issues here for the board to consider. And earlier this year, you may have seen a statement from IOSCO encouraging our board to work closely with the FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board in the US, to ensure that our requirements here remain largely converged. And I think it's no secret that the FASB are ahead of us in their deliberations, in their project, and they have tentatively agreed to change to a amortization and an impairment route in terms of the subsequent treatment of goodwill. Some of the details around that are still under discussion, but that seems to be the direction of travel there. I believe our board and the FASB will have a joint meeting within the next few months, which this will certainly be one of the issues that we will explore together. Having said that, clearly each board will then ultimately reach its own conclusion in terms of how to proceed here. The next slide outlines a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 16 that we considered earlier this year, where we published an exposure draft, and this followed on to an issue that had been flagged by the Interpretations Committee. And it sought to address providing a consistent method for initially measuring right of use of assets and liabilities in a sale and leaseback transaction, but also subsequent measurement requirements in that area. And the hope here was to provide a very narrow scope amendment to address that diversity in practice. However, the feedback on the board's ED has been mixed. There have been some concerns that the proposal that the board put forward was different from some of the underlying concepts that are used in IFRS 16. So the board is at the moment re-deliberating these proposals, and the next step is to decide the project direction here, which I think is most likely to happen in the third quarter of next year. So let me pause here before I go on to talk about the existing and forthcoming consultations, just to see if there are any questions on those projects that I've discussed already.
Nick, this is Aki. Can I make one question?
Of course, Aki, please.
Yes. So you mentioned you're going to have a meeting with FASB on goodwill and impairment issue. Could you repeat again the scope of discussion? It's the impairment test method only and much broader discussion. And do you expect, total convergence of two bodies in terms of those topics? Or is there any possibility each organization have a different approach on this topic?
So I think in terms of the scope of issues that we'll be discussing, it will be the key issues that we included in our discussion paper, which will be the disclosures around the subsequent performance of acquisitions.
Okay.
It will also be the subsequent accounting for goodwill. And related to that are potential improvements to the impairment test. So it will be all of those things. Look, there are a whole host of possible outcomes here, and I would be a fool to try and predict which way this will end. One thing that we did ask during our discussion paper, which we published last year, was how important convergence was. And I'd say there we got mixed opinions. Mm-hmm. For some, it's important. For others, it's saying, no, actually, as a board, you should do what you think is the right thing. And convergence should be a secondary consideration. But clearly, it is a factor at play, and this is a global marketplace. But at this stage, I think it's impossible to predict where that will land.
Thank you very much for your information. I totally understand.
Thank you. Thanks, Ahi. So if there are no further questions, let me move on to our current and forthcoming consultations. And if we could go to the slide on business combinations under common control. So we've talked about this at certainly several CMAC meetings. I'm sure GPF have talked about it at all. So this is a discussion paper that the board published in November last year, and it seeks to fill a gap in current IFRS requirements. And this is where the acquiring entity and the acquired company share the same ultimate parent. And the focus is on what we call the receiving entity, so the business that is making the acquisition. And at the moment, we don't have requirements, specific requirements in terms of how that entity accounts for the acquisition. And consequently, there is diversity in practice. So here we've tried to look at both cost and benefits. And a key point of differentiation is when there is a non-controlling or minority interest in the acquiring company. And very broadly, where that's the case, we are proposing that companies should follow the acquisition method of accounting, so broadly in line with IFRS 3. But in the absence of a non-controlling interest, we're saying that it would be more appropriate and it would stack up on a cost-benefit basis to use a book value method to account for the transaction. So this is a big issue in certain jurisdictions, not so important in others. Very happy, very keen to hear feedback here, and the comment period here is open until the 1st of September. The next one, which actually is the post-implementation review of IFRS 10, 11, and 12. This actually is now a closed consultation. I think since these slides were put together, the consultation has closed. So we refer to these as the consolidation suite of standards. The board is seeking to understand, are these standards working as intended as part of our standard PIR process? And generally, the early feedback is, yes, there are some areas for improvement, but overall, they're probably working as we would expect. And the board will be considering and the feedback on the request for information early next quarter in order to decide what, if any, standard setting is required in this area. Certainly, a PIR doesn't necessitate standard setting. It may be needed if there are deficiencies that have come out through that process. So the next area is around rate-regulated activities, and this is where the board published an exposure draft in January this year, and the comment period remains open until the end of July. This is particularly a focus for business which, as we describe, have regulatory assets, regulatory liabilities. So it's typically companies in the utility sector, but there may be others as well. And this is looking at where there are timing differences between when those entities provide their services and when recognition is recognized. And this is all to do with the relationship between the nature of their regulated activities, between the activities of the regulator. And the project, in essence, seeks to better reflect the economics of these activities by removing some of those timing differences to align the provision of service more closely with revenue recognition and hence financial performance. So I say this is mainly going to impact the utility sector. It may impact other rate-regulated businesses. Sometimes people talk about airport companies here, for instance. And the board will start considering the feedback here towards the end of this year. The next slide is the disclosure initiative, the targeted standards level review of disclosures. We don't need to go through this in details. We discussed it yesterday. Thank you to everyone for your insights and input here. The board is very keen. This is a new approach. We're describing it as a pilot approach. So the board is very keen to hear feedback on these proposals, and the comment period closes in October this year. So certainly we'll be taking into consideration what we heard yesterday from CMAC and GPF members, but we are actively reaching out to many other stakeholders as well. The next one on the list is a narrow scope amendment to IS21, which I mentioned in my introductory comments. And here, again, this is seeking to eliminate perhaps some of the diversity in practice when exchangeability between two currencies is lacking. So first of all, how to make an assessment around exchangeability, and then a route of how to estimate spot exchange rates when exchangeability is lacking, together with some disclosures in those circumstances. So this I think is quite a practical set of proposals. So to help entities navigate those circumstances when, I say, exchangeability is lacking between two currencies, but also to provide sufficient disclosures to users to help them understand some of those issues, perhaps when exchange rates have to be estimated in lack of an exchangeable spot rate. So the comment period ends here on the 1st of September. The next slide, again, we have talked about this earlier today, is management commentary. I think this is a important initiative of the board. It's very much the focal point for, we see it as the focal point for material information, combining financial information and other information, including sustainability-related financial disclosures. So as with the Disclosure Initiative project, we really appreciate your comments today and would welcome any formal contributions by comment letter. And here, the consultation period formally ends in November of this year. So we do have a lot of projects ongoing. And this next one is a project which is currently in the pipeline. It's not a live consultation yet. And this also falls under the umbrella of the Disclosure Initiative. And the working title of our project here has been subsidiaries that are SMEs. And in some respects, that title is a little bit of a misnomer. I think the standard is likely to be called subsidiaries that do not have public accountability. And the, in essence, the issue that the board is seeking to address here is where a parent, or through the consolidation process, a group of companies, the best way for them to report is to use the measurement and recognition criteria of full IFRS rather than IFRS for SMEs, because of simply pulling that consolidation pack together, that all of the individual entities that make up the group are using common measurement and recognition criteria to make that exercise of, pulling the consolidation pack together more straightforward. But given that the users for those subsidiary accounts is a different set of users, to try and also allow for a reduced disclosure requirements to run alongside the measurement and recognition requirements that are in IFRS generally. So say a different user group here, it's probably not most of the users that are on this call, but this seems to represent a potential opportunity to reduce or remove some unnecessary costs for companies. Allowing the measurement recognition criteria that are used, or requirements that are used in IFRS generally, but with reduced disclosures. And we expect to publish an exposure draft here in the third quarter of this year. So we have a question. Does the parent require to make adjustments to line to full IFRS? I mean, with at the group level. So I think this is in essence trying to. I mean, clearly there will still be intergroup transactions that need to be eliminated in pulling together the group accounts, and that may certainly be in relationship between parents and subsidiaries as well, which is still required. But I think what we are seeking to do here, above and beyond eliminating those intergroup transactions, is making it easy to simply combine the assets and liabilities that are measured in subsidiary financial statements to work up to the group numbers. So using full IFRS, but not with the full set of IFRS disclosures, which we feel will not necessarily be appropriate or needed for the users of subsidiary accounts. So it's really trying to provide the best of both worlds. Stephen, you have a comment.
Thank you, Nick. Just to say that in the UK, we are allowed under UK regulations to apply IFRS with reduced disclosure. And it sounds as if this may be a project with similar objectives. And that has been really valuable for groups that report under IFRS to have the same reporting rules effectively, but be relieved from some of the more detailed disclosures. So very much supportive of this attendance and engagement.
Great, that's great to hear, Stephen. We did look at what had been happening in the UK and the extent to which that option had been taken up, but also where similar arrangements weren't available in the rest of the world to try and provide this provision. Thanks. So then just moving on to the last couple of slides in this section, and we will be getting to FICE in a moment. It's not being forgotten. But we have initiated a post-implementation review of IFRS 9. We're dividing the review of the standard here into three different steps. And we are starting off with classification and measurement. And at a later date, we will follow up with impairment and hedge accounting. And I think it's a big standard. Some of the requirements have been are newer than others. And certainly, as far as impairment is required, we'd like to see some more evidence. And in terms of a fuller credit cycle, I think. And that's one of the reasons for doing this in pieces. And so we will be we're working towards a request for information, which, as with other post-implementation reviews, we'll be asking you for views on is this element, in this case of IFRS 9, working well, and if there are any deficiencies and what improvements the board might consider. So that takes us to financial instruments with the characteristics of equity. And just to give you an update on the project here. So just to remind you, these are debt instruments that have some equity features, which have been a long-standing challenge for many. The board published a discussion paper here in June 2018. With plenty of feedback on that discussion paper. So we've now moved into, the board's agreed to the next phase of the project, which really responds to that feedback. And it does that in a number of ways. So firstly, it's decided to explore clarifying the existing principles that are in IAS 32, rather than introducing new concepts and principles. Can we use the existing principles that are within the standard to address some of the practice issues that have arisen? To what extent can we use those as opposed to introducing new concepts and new principles? In combination with that, can we provide further classification guidance and illustrative examples to reinforce some of those issues? And thirdly, and I think this was an area that generally actually got some positive response in the exposure draft in the discussion paper, was around improving the presentation and disclosure requirements. So these can also be part of the solution. We've talked about some of the suggested disclosure requirements at certainly meetings of CMAC and I suspect at GPF before, and we've listened to that feedback carefully. we've sought to achieve the disclosure objectives that users have, but seem to do that in also in a straightforward manner that won't result in pages and pages and pages of extra disclosure required from entities. And those have been active discussions in our board meetings over the last few months. So again, I'm going to pause here, just in terms of, I've covered a lot of ground in terms of our current consultations and forthcoming consultations. I see there is, I have a message from James. So where are we? I think James's message is, where are we exactly in the consultation period? So he's looking at chart five, which, so chart five indicates there will be a post-implementation review of IFRS 9, and it will start in the fourth quarter of 2021, and it will have a 120-day comment period. And I think the reference as at, which you refer to, James, as at May 2021, that's when the board agreed for there to be a 120-day comment period. And I think it's a small print. The board is reserving the right to change that period. I think that's all that's saying. I appreciate how that can be a little misleading. So just to clarify that that isn't yet open for comment, that we will be publishing a request for information as we foresee things today, that will be published in the fourth quarter, towards the start of the fourth quarter of this year, and it will have a 120-day comment period. That's the intention at this time. So thank you for highlighting that. Any other further comments on the current or forthcoming consultations? That doesn't seem to be the case. So we will move on, and we will briefly touch upon some other areas and some other projects. Some of these are active. Some of them are not particularly the focus of the board's attention at the moment. So there is a live project on provisions and some targeted improvements to IF 37, which again, we've talked about some of these at CMAC at the moment. It's still a live project. The board hasn't discussed it for a number of months, but we'll come back to it at some stage. The second project that we have started to have some initial discussions around is around the equity method. And this was raised, it was mentioned in some of the feedback yesterday that we heard around the agenda consultation. At the moment, this is still, the board is still scoping out the detail of this project. There's been some initial thoughts here, but that work is still ongoing. We have a couple of other research projects in the current work plan. One is looking at pension benefits that depend on asset returns, and there are some unusual outcomes from the current requirements here. We will review the ongoing research we're taking here, I think in Q3 of this year, to work out whether there is a feasible solution to the issue that's been raised here that the board can implement in a narrow scope without opening up the whole question around accounting for pension benefits. I think if we can't, we won't proceed with this. If we can in a narrow scope, we will clearly consult on that. And then the other project to mention here is a piece of work on extractive industries. And the board has been taking some extensive preliminary research on whether it should initiate a project on extractive industries. And this is particularly around the accounting, I would say, in the exploration and evaluation stage. The board has had mixed feedback here, which has been reported to the board. We've heard from some, particularly preparers, who have identified perhaps some complexity and some diversity in practice in terms of how the current requirements are implemented and applied. And then we've heard some issues from users that this isn't necessarily their focus, that often their focus is much more around reserves and resources and how entities provide information on reserves and resources, which are actually outside the scope of the board's remit. So the board will decide within the next few months whether it's going to actually initiate a formal project to take it out of the research stage. So we have another question, which I'll address at this stage because it is around projects, which is from Shanif. Are there any current projects that jointly work with the FASB? We have no joint projects. I think, as you all know, the formal agreement to pursue convergence lapsed a number of years ago. We do have some standards that have various degrees of convergence, and we are aware of those. But there are no joint projects between the two boards. And even in goodwill impairment, I don't think we foresee a joint project. The boards do continue to exchange notes and ideas and have a dialogue. And that dialogue exists not only between board members, both formally and informally, but also between members of our technical team. So the staff will keep very close contact with their counterparts at the FASB. But there are no current joint projects with the FASB, and I don't foresee those on the horizon either. So let me then just briefly move on to the work of the Interpretations Committee. And probably, as ever, the committee has been busy, but I think if we go to slide 28, just to highlight a couple of agenda decisions. One that we talked about already, which is the sale and lease back with variable payments, which has led to that potential narrow scope amendment. But the other one which I want to flag, which I know is an interest particularly to users, is around supply chain financing arrangements, and particularly those described as reverse factoring. So here the Interpretations Committee did produce an agenda decision, and agenda decision, what it does is it reaffirms that the requirements in the existing IFRS requirements are clear in terms of the question that was put to the board. So it is very narrow in terms of what particular question was put to the Interpretations Committee. Are the requirements clear? Now, we went back, I think, with clarity on this one. What I would observe is that the requirements are very clear, but there may be diversity in practice in terms of how those requirements are applied. And what we find with agenda decisions is that, having reaffirmed the requirements, there's a process through audit firms. Audit firms will start reminding their staff, educating their staff. They will look at the agenda consultation, and this should help reduce the diversity in practice. But above and beyond the agenda decision, the staff did some initial work on, is the scope to improve disclosures around the use of supply chain financing arrangements. And that's an ongoing piece of work by the staff, and I'd expect them to bring further papers to the board on that over the next few months. So that brings me to the end of the update on the ISB. I don't know if there are any further questions or issues that have arisen from any of that. Very happy to take them or hear comments. So that doesn't appear to be the case. Thank you for that. And thank you for the questions, very helpful. We are just hoping to see whether we can have our next I should say this now is formally the end of the meeting, but we do now have a optional session on the agenda, which is an update around from our trustees team on the sustainability reporting and the proposed amendments to the constitution, with the hope or the potential, let's say, possible formation of an international sustainabilities board under the IFRS Foundation umbrella. And I'm just wanting to see whether we have managed to tee up our team a little earlier to speak on that.
Nick, just before we wrap up the public session, I wonder whether I could formally record the Global Carers Forum's thanks to Martin for his service to the group over the past number of years, at least five, I'm not sure quite how many, but it's been great as a committee working with him, and we would like to make sure that our thanks is recorded.
Thanks, Steve. That's very kind of you, and we will make sure Martin, that message is relayed to Martin. Martin's been a board member for 9 years. He's been great to have as a colleague also on the board, and a strong advocate of preparative perspectives, but also understanding the interaction with other stakeholders. But very kind of you, and thank you also, Richard, for acknowledging Martin's input over that time. Thank you.
Thank you.